Expect the unexpected. Talanx CEO Thorsten Leue talks to Megan Reitz, Professor of Leadership and Dialogue at Halt International Business School. She's one of the most influential management thinkers of the world. Their topic today, feedback culture.
Megan, let me kick off with a harsh question. What was the harshest feedback you've ever gotten?
I've had quite a lot of harsh feedback in my career. Harsh is a funny word. I've had a lot of challenging feedback, and the feedback that sticks in my mind more than any other was when I was a consultant. I was probably in my late 20s, and my manager, who I really respected at the time, he said to me, "Megan, the problem is when you walk into the boardroom, you're labelled as young and woman, if you're lucky, often girl. And that's a problem because you will find it more difficult to be heard." I think that was the first time the whole idea of labels really occurred to me. And he was right. You know, some people, when I tell them that feedback, they're sort of, ooh. But he was right, and he was telling me well-intentioned. He said, actually, this is how things are. What are we going to do about this? And I think from that moment on, I had an interest in how we label one another and what that means for what we say and how we get heard.
How about you, Thorsten? Get any harsh feedbacks?
Oh, yes, mine was harsh. I consider it was harsh. My first job I had, I didn't like the project leader. And I didn't agree with that, what they do. And I talked to my teammates that I totally disagree what we do. I still remember I just went to the floor and the boss came, right? And he said, "Look, I was listening to somebody who told me that you are against my project." I said, "Well, you know, I disagree, it's true, but I was embarrassed." He said, "I don't like members in the team who don't speak up, who talk to each other negatively, and I don't like this, so I don't want you." I said, "Fine, I got this. I don't want you as well." So I went to the boss of the whole company and told him my opinion and said, "I will leave tomorrow." Yeah. So, and I said, after a while, I was strong, I felt good, I left the company. And then I thought he was so right that I'm really a guy behind the curtain playing passive-aggressive games among the team to disturb the whole thing. I still believe, and the project failed actually, it was the right decision to leave, and the content, I was on the right side, I feel, but I did the wrong way. So I always said to myself, never ever I will be passive aggressive, talking very badly, very openly only to the bosses to change the situation, not behind the curtain. I hate politics until now.
You being a bespoke expert in speaking up, wasn't that the right thing? Wasn't he doing what you in your books often claim, in the sense that, okay, he did play a little bit behind the scenes, but then he spoke up openly?
So my work looks at the speaking up and the listening up. And so we have a responsibility always to challenge ourselves and say, okay, what is my responsibility to say this? If I'm speaking here, is there somebody else that needs to hear this? And how will I step up to do that? And it's the responsibility of the project leader to make that as easy as possible. So the question is sort of not good or bad or right or wrong. It's how do we work in relationship? And how does the person in a position of perceived power actually make it far more easier for people to disagree with them? And that's a really key aspect. So
I think you're right, because he likes all yes men, let's say. Always people say yes, and there was a culture, and I didn't like it at all.
Yes.
So it was both sides, I would guess. But the question was to speak up. I felt after 30 years, I knew I spoke up at least. You know, that was my feeling. I feel very good in my consciousness that I did the right thing at that time.
Yes, that reminds me of the Samuel Goldwyn quote. Samuel Goldwyn, the US film producer, "I don't want any yes men around me. I want everybody to speak up, even if it costs them their job." Which again is that classic kind of relationship, you know. How do we help people to speak up, but not make that too threatening to do?
What you say is possibly easier said than done. So how do you foster a culture in which both happens? What do you say? People don't say yes but speak up when they disagree, and get listened, but don't do it in a way that threatens the organization or the spirit in the team.
Yeah, well, there's the question. So I could talk for about an hour on that.
We don't have the time.
I know,
for
I'm aware of that. So one of the key things I would say is that one of the biggest traps, one of the biggest mistakes we make in organizations, because speak up initiatives and getting people to speak up is a really hot topic right now for some very good reasons that I'm sure we'll come on to. But one of the biggest mistakes is that we do point at people who are silent and say, come on, you know, speak up, be brave. And we try and fix the people that are silent. And whilst, you know, that can be valid, and we do need to help people to speak up and invite them to speak up, a lot more of our attention needs to be on how we create an environment which feels safe for people to challenge, in particular, as I said before. So a lot of my work actually focuses on how do we invite people to speak and how do we listen? Because otherwise, people they may speak up, but they will learn very quickly that there's no point. So we have to work at both aspects, you know, both areas. And that would be one point. And the other point I would make in terms of how do we create these kind of cultures is we rarely talk about power in organizations. And if there's one thing that holds a culture in place in terms of what gets said and who gets heard, it's how we construct power and status and authority. Things like hierarchy, but things like departmental labels, can be gender, can be age, can be tenure, you know, the amount of time you spent in an organization. We label one another and create an idea of status and authority. And that, of course, affects who feels like they need to speak up and can speak up and who should be listened to. So again, we need to talk about power and we need to talk about status if we're going to start shifting cultural norms. But ironically, power and status is a really awkward thing to talk about very often.
Interesting. You know, I like you say, we have to make the silence people speaking up and make mistakes, as far as I understood. And for me, sometimes the question comes, when you transform a company, as we do, for example, now you always have those who speak up are those very high performers anyway, because they love to speak up to show, and as well those who don't like changes, they speak up as well. And sometimes I have the feeling, why not, you know, making sure that those are, let's say, more silent and not get always the same people as a bias. You always talk to the same outperformers.
Yeah.
You always have anyway those who really struggle with changes to get really more variety. So it's not just of getting those up, but getting those others a bit down to leave room for the others. What
yes.
do you think about it? It's something as well, no?
Yes, and we know that certain sectors of our employees are more likely to speak up, feel more able to speak
exactly.
up. And so it can mean that the same people stay silent. And it can also mean when we're a leader or a manager, we're inviting people to speak up, but we're hearing the same voices in return. So we're in a kind of echo chamber. And it's really interesting being a professor of leadership, looking at how our understanding of leadership is shifting here. You know, to generalize, we used to think good leadership was mainly about having the vision, being charismatic, persuading others of the right answer. And whereas that is still the case in some situations, we're facing many what we might call wicked problems that don't have a solution that's known by somebody at the top. And in that case, a leadership practice is moving towards how do I realize that my perspective is partial? How do I understand and be aware that I have blind spots? And how do I, with huge curiosity, try and figure out what those blind spots are?
Well, we call it customer orientation. So I would say the higher you come in hierarchy, the less you know what the customer is thinking about, right? And just how, which kind of format you find, how to make sure that you talk really in an organized way to those people who daily by daily talk to the customers, right?
Yeah.
And then not just get it systematic, not just, you know, per random, you go around and talk to one person. This is well a mistake. You should get a vast examples to really feel what the customer, or different customer groups thinking about.
Yes.
So I totally agree. This is, at the end, really art to make sure, find formats to hear the voice of those who talk to the customer. Customer orientation doesn't start, you know, with a bot. It starts with the people on the bottom.
Absolutely. The bottom. So, and that's one of the areas I really focus on, is as you get more senior, you cannot help but go into a bit exactly. of a bubble. You will become disconnected, and very often it's your junior employees that are where the action is. So they see opportunities, they see mistakes and issues and problems, and yet they're the least likely group to speak up about it. And
it's a filtering feedback from hierarchy to hierarchy, and everybody wants to make a career.
Yes.
So how somebody seven levels below me will tell me the truth?
Yes.
He wants to make a career.
So I interviewed the chief operating officer of one of the global banks as part of my research, and we were talking about the financial crash. And he said, just on exactly what you just said there, he said, it got to the stage in the bank where the only people that believed in the data that the board was receiving was the board. So in other words, at each level, you know, data was fed up to the manager for a particular reason and purpose, and was kind of polished and made to look quite good. And that happened again and again until the board were really quite disconnected from what was actually going on the ground, of course. And one of our biggest mistakes we can make as a leader is to assume that we really are, you know what's going on the ground, and that we don't have work to do there.
And, you know, and how to get this is to get trust. For me, this word was missing in your speech for me until now. So because you have, if you imagine, so many different cultures globally, everybody perceives this kind of psychological safety and speak up in a different way. Right, and if you go to several cultures, you always have to make sure that you understand the situation. Ideally, you understand the language. Ideally, because it's not just about talking, it's about non-verbal communication, which is much more powerful, as we all know. And if I do mistakes here as a leader, when I go around the world and have the same format everywhere, I will totally fail. I have to find customized, really, formats. And my behavior should be as well different, moving the hands, not moving the hands, showing whatever, the shoes, not the shoes. So, you know, in many different cultures. So I can be totally right in this culture and totally wrong in the other culture. What stays is trust.
And trust is one of those things that, you know, that old adage that it takes a long time to build and it's very quick to lose.
Exactly.
In terms of speaking up, trust comes from the stories that we tell ourselves about what happened last time. You know, what happened last time I spoke up? Did that end well?
Exactly.
And if that ended well, we kind of go, okay.
Yes.
And then we might try again.
And trust is the sum of experience you make as an organization. And one, you know, bad experience destroys totally your trust as you fail once. So therefore, it's very important, very lot of, as you said, therefore it takes time. A lot of small examples to make sure. And then you can even go to some areas in this world you make mistakes, non-verbal communication, for example, and they will still say, okay, fine, he's excused.
So is there such a thing as too much speaking up, too much listening to, or is that the principle, the more the better?
Theoretically, it is. I do sometimes meet some people in my work who say, I speak up about everything. Yeah. I'm open about everything, and I usually say to them, that's a different issue.
Great you said that. Great you said that.
So, yes, it is possible to speak up too much, and we have a saying, I'm sure that there's a saying across the world, especially if you're a parent, pick your battles. So we don't speak up about everything. We speak up about the things that we feel that we have some level of evidence for and that really matter to us. I have to say, though, it's rare that I get into organisations and they say to me, Megan, the problem is everybody's speaking up. One thing that is happening recently, which is very interesting, is that employees are speaking up far more now about wider social and environmental issues. And I have met some leaders in that area of my research that have kind of looked a bit worried and concerned. Some leaders and managers are struggling with what is being spoken up about. But in the next 5 years, there will be more employees speaking up about those wider social environmental issues. So we need to equip our managers and our leaders to be able to have those sorts of conversations that they haven't been practiced in having previously.
But I agree as well as you, the constructive quality feedback should be as well always seen, because we're all here together to work better somehow in the company and to perform better at the end of the day. So it's not that you should talk about everything, you should really think about what makes sense, but always thinking about what helps the company and myself within the company. So this question is, I think, as well very important. So it's about quantity, and I think quantity, I agree with you, it can be never enough, you know, but as well as the quality which helps the company.
Mm.
And people should be prepared as well, not just, you know, when you give a feedback as well, you should be well prepared. I think this should be really expected in many kind of feedback situations.
What I'd say about the speaking up with feedback is that, of course, sometimes, especially if we are disagreeing with something or we're saying something a bit challenging, we often don't put it brilliantly well. Do you know what I mean? When emotions are involved, we can speak up and not it doesn't go very professionally. And again, what I try and work with managers on is understanding that, and in their response when somebody speaks up, even if they don't do it brilliantly well, their response determines whether that person speaks up again.
Very good point. I totally like this, because a CEO for me is a chief, you know, energy officer. You know, you always have to see if somebody is, you know, not quality-wise high what he's saying, but if there's energy, emotions there, this is important. Mm. This drives different decisions. So
yes.
It doesn't matter how it's worded, how great the PowerPoint slides are, I don't care about this one.
Yeah.
But is there some substance in that what he's saying? And how he's saying is, we should discount that one. You know,
yes.
This should be really discounted. Energy is important. And if someone has emotions, this is great. You just have to steer it in the right direction together to get better company with higher energy.
How do we ensure that interesting voices speak up that possibly don't speak up naturally, to make those people speak who are valuable source, who might have valuable opinions and ideas that you don't see at first glance?
Good question. I mean, again, trust for me is the main point. I have many, many talks, many, many one-to-ones, and people feel they can talk to me. And our question is, do I talk to the right people? And often biased talk always the same people, right? And I never decide on one opinion. I try really to get as much puzzle together to make decisions.
Let me touch a very first, last aspect I would like to reflect on. It seems to me that in times of transformation, speaking up is especially important. Does that change anything, or is that everything what you said before probably applies also to transformation? But are there any special things we have to consider when a company wants a change, needs feedback in order to do so?
Well, so many organizations are undergoing transformation programs and change or culture change programs. And by definition, you can't transform an organization unless different things get talked about and different people get heard. So transformation, by its definition, we often focus, of course, we focus on the processes that need to change or the systems that need to change. But very often that transformation strategy requires more challenge or more agility or more innovation. And that goes towards, you know, our conversational habits, what gets talked about, what doesn't get talked about. So in particular, if we're seeking for further innovation or further agility, we have to make it a habit for people to stick up their hand and say, I've got an idea. We have to make it, even more interestingly, we have to make it a habit for people to stick up their hand and say, I disagree. I've got a different perspective. And that piece of the jigsaw is often forgotten about in favor of the systems and the processes. So what we need to do to transform our organizations is very often transform our conversations. And that's everybody's responsibility, but it certainly falls on those people that are in perceived positions of power, because they're in the best situation, if you like, to be able to invite people to speak up differently and to respond, so that people form those stories in their mind that says, actually, this is a place that you can speak up. This place is safe. Safe not being, by the way, cozy. Safe meaning I can speak up, I can challenge. My idea may not be taken forward, but it is respected. And that goes back to the trust that you were speaking about.
And I would add trust and the transparency. So find processes. We have many surveys. We have it as well. We take it high on the agenda, even in the remuneration system, that you find those people at least anonymously. You can do something out with the survey. We have, for example, 24,000 people. 80% responded to a survey worldwide. And you get really interesting information here. And you can challenge leaders when something in that clear survey is not done. And this is a work in progress always. Mm. And I like this as well, to confront with transparency. Mm. Yeah. Mm. So trust and transparency.
Thorsten, Megan, thank you very much for speaking up as insightfully here on this table. To all of you, thank you very much for your attention. I have one clear takeaway. We all should speak up more often, but being well prepared. Thank you a lot once again. And besides that, expect the unexpected. Thank you.